Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Tomorrow Life Sciences. Ever wondered how and where your frozen eggs and embryos are stored? They are kept in tanks called dewars. Inside each tank, hundreds of eggs and embryos are submerged in liquid nitrogen. They're identified with tiny handwritten or printed labels, and the clinic manages and monitors them manually. This part of the IVF lab hasn't been updated in decades and also hasn't benefited from technology or innovation. That's where life sciences company Tomorrow comes in. Tomorrow has created the world's first and only automated platform for the management, identification, and storage of frozen human eggs and embryos. What does this mean? Tomorrow's technology replaces handwritten labels with sophisticated digital tracking, which creates an unbreakable digital link between the specimens and the patient. It also automates a huge part of the process, vastly reducing the risk of mistakes and human error. Finally, it monitors the safety of those frozen eggs and embryos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Tomorrow's state-of-the-art technology gives patients and clinics peace of mind that those precious, irreplaceable frozen eggs and embryos are safe and protected. Tomorrow is being rapidly adopted by a host of clinics across the United States, creating a new and improved standard of care, and will be available in clinics in the UK this year. To find out more, visit tmrw.org. Links in the show notes. Hello there. How are you doing? Can you believe this is the penultimate episode of this series of the podcast? I just want to take a moment to say a huge thank you to all of my guests for joining me and sharing their stories, and to you guys for listening, which is just, yeah, well, the podcast wouldn't be around if you weren't here listening. So thank you, thank you, thank you. If you do listen and you enjoy it, please, if you haven't already, go and leave a review. Why not? Go on, go on. You can head to the link on my website. Just if you scroll to the bottom and click on podcast, obviously I'll leave one in the show notes as well. And yeah, it would just be amazing to hear from you. It really, really would. All being well, I have just got back from my holiday. I say all being well because, well, I have started to introduce that into my vocabulary a lot recently. But the reason mainly is because when I said that I went on holiday or was going on holiday last time, it didn't happen because my dad got ill. So all being well, I've just got back from holiday, but I'm recording this beforehand. So, you know, speaking of my dad, a little update. I'm not really sharing much about it all on Instagram because he is awake and alert now, but he doesn't really know what has gone on ultimately. But he is doing really, really well. He's still in hospital as of today. He did have to have a hip operation. So after everything, it turned out his hip had got dislocated at some point when they were saving his life. Do you know what I mean? So it is what it is. But it had to, they couldn't wiggle it back in. So he had to be operated on and opened up to put it back in. But he's having physio. He's kind of starting to support himself with standing up, etc. So it's all going in the right direction, which is amazing. I can't, you know, like talk about that time though without reflecting back on how difficult it was. And there were a few things that got me through. Community, you know, whether that be my husband Bob, my family, my friends, the wider community, like just a huge network on Instagram and beyond who were just incredible. But also I know that the work that I did on myself last year following the end of our trying to conceive journey helped just, I don't know, tenfold as well. It just, it really, really, I don't think I would have got through it as well as I did. And trust me, you know, there were moments of pure desperation, but overall, I don't think I would have got through it had I not done the work I did last year on trying to live a happier and more content life. Because having done that work, I had put lots of things in place which supported my emotional and mental health. And some of that is, you know, creating daily routines to help ground me, being self-aware enough not to take on too much, working on my priorities so that I felt more balanced in what I was tackling at any given moment. And even things like, you know, meditating, which is something that I've literally done for over a decade, and knowing, and, you know, that I needed to do it, taking myself away from situations to give myself half an hour meditation so that I could come back refreshed, calmer, ready. You know, honestly, having all these things in place helped me so much. I don't know how I would have got through it had I not done that. And I say this to you because I truly, truly want to encourage you to set time aside for you, whatever that looks like, whether you are trying to conceive, pregnant, or parenting. I am so confident that you will reap the rewards, not only in the short term, but throughout your life when new hurdles are put in front of you. So hopefully you're nodding along to this and like, go for it. Crack on, please, please do it, whatever it looks like. If you like the sound of it, but you're wondering where to start, I am really excited to let you know that from July, I will officially be taking on new coaching clients. So I took on a couple in June because I was contacted, but I am actually kind of actively, I suppose, saying now, if you want to work with me, I am available. If you want to jump on a free 15-minute call to find out more, please, please check out the link in the show notes wherever you're listening to this, or drop me an email, etc. Let's talk. You know, I'm here to support you and I'm really, really looking forward to doing that. Right. On to today's episode, where I am joined by the beautiful, and I genuinely mean that she is beautiful inside and out, Pippa Vosper. Pippa is a writer, presenter, and brand consultant, and works with some of the most exclusive brands in the world. She is also besties with the likes of Edward Enninful, editor of Vogue, no less. You know, this is like top-notch fashion aficionado. Anyway, it wasn't all of that that made me aware of Pippa a few years back now. It was the fact that she shared her heartbreaking story of losing her second son, Axel, when she was 20 weeks pregnant. That, and following that loss, she was finally pregnant at the same time as me, and her daughter Audrey is just a couple of months older than Ren. As can be the case with Instagram, having slid into her DMs in a not weird way, we have chatted back and forth a lot over the last few years. And she even kindly invited me pre-COVID to one of the events where she shared her story. And one of the things I love about Pippa, outside of the fact that she is genuinely such a kind and caring soul, is that she's bringing the conversation around infertility and baby loss to what I feel is a bit of an untouchable audience. Now, it's not that I don't think all of this happens to Vogue readers, don't get me wrong, but I just don't think it's talked about in publications like that. But it is now because of Pippa. And we talk about that a little in our conversation. Her initial piece on baby loss was one of the most shared articles in Vogue. Like that just speaks volumes, doesn't it? I'm really, really excited, isn't the right word, I guess. I'm just really honored to bring you Pippa's story for the Finally Pregnant podcast. And for those who are interested, and we will talk about this a little bit in the episode, Pippa's new book, Beyond Grief, Navigating the Journey of Pregnancy and Baby Loss, is already available on pre-order. It's actually out in August. And there is a link to Pippa's book and her Instagram in the show notes. Huge thanks to Pippa for sharing her story, and huge thanks to you for listening. I really hope that you enjoy this episode. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we head into today's chat, I want to remind you just how important it can be to talk and share our stories with people who get it. That's just one of the reasons I created this very podcast. And you already know how important that is because you're here to listen to people whose experiences you relate to. But I want to give everyone the opportunity to talk. And that is just one of the reasons I launched The Hangout, a community specifically for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. When you join, you'll receive a free meditation, access to a 24/7 community, invitations to exclusive live podcast recordings with experts across all areas of pregnancy and parenting, a full and growing resource library, support groups, discounts, and more. Find out more at catstrawbridge.com. I look forward to seeing you there soon. Hi there, Pippa. How are you doing?
I'm so good. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. I'm very well. It is such a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me since we first met that night at one of my talks and we've been speaking before. This is so nice to now, 2 years on, be on your podcast. So thank you.
Oh, it really is lovely. And we got talking, I think, when you were pregnant with your third child, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's right, because she's born around the same time as Ren, a couple of months older than Ren. But rather than kind of jump in at the, not the end, but that bit, it would be amazing if you could share a little bit about your journey, your story.
Sure. Well, I got pregnant for the first time at 35, and I'd met my husband a year and a half before. So we postponed a wedding and said, right, let's crack on. Because obviously at 35, I'd heard all the speeches about fertility and, you know, how it declines. So I said, you know what, let's and move on. And my husband was ready too. So that was great. 7 months it took, I believe, to get pregnant with my son, my first son. And even then, comically, I thought that was quite a long time. So, you know, you're like, well, everyone else is getting pregnant around me. So, you know, and then 7 months later, fortunately, pregnant. Apart from extreme nausea, the pregnancy completely fine. Did the usual, you know, new pregnant mother stuff, you know, minor worries that you think are huge at the time. And then bar the preeclampsia at the end and an emergency cesarean, because my son's head got stuck because it was 100 percentile, enormous. Everything was fine. You know, we thought that the emergency cesarean was pretty full on, but standard. You know, it was no panic. Well, there was a panic at the time, but not afterwards. So then a couple of years later, we said, right, let's try for another baby, thinking that it would be quicker this time. In 2 months, I'd be pregnant, as, you know, as we all do. And then you never know there's a problem until there's a problem, right? So then it wasn't happening, it wasn't happening, it wasn't happening. We did some tests, nothing really came out. And, you know, as being wrong, particularly. So unexplained infertility, as so many of us get labeled with.
I'm right there with you. Yes.
Yeah, right. And so we go on for another year or so. And at this point, of course, I'm approaching late 30s. So I said to my husband, right, let's start IVF. And we'd had some savings put aside to do our loft in our house. So we said, right, bugger it. We're going to have to use that. Let's just go through it a bit. And thinking we'd have one round of IVF and everything would be fine. And it was. We had one round of IVF, you know, a couple of great quality embryos, went to blastocyst through the IVF process. And literally we thought, well, that wasn't that bad. You know, the IVF process for me was really hard and I didn't love it. And I reacted very badly to the drugs and got really down, which I don't think was helped by it being January and cold and dark and, you know, but my advice to anyone would be get out every morning if you're doing IVF or even trying to conceive in any other natural or assisted way. And I didn't do any of my own advice, of course, got really depressed and blah, blah. Anyway, it had worked. And we were like, well, okay, great. That was it then. Perfect. 5 months into my pregnancy, I did go into premature labor. My cervix had opened without my knowledge because my son, no fault of his own, of course, my first son had damaged the cervix. And in the NHS system, it is not their fault, but they don't do regular scans, right? So I got told, and I did ask the questions afterwards, had I have had more scans, would I have saved my second son? And the answer to that was probably yes.
Gosh.
Because we would have seen the cervix opening. But many cases of loss happen. And I think there is the tiniest positive to be said for knowing why you did lose a pregnancy, because the unimaginable sort of mental torture of not knowing why you lost a pregnancy is extremely hard. So this was the very small positive in the extreme negative that I knew that they, you know, would I, should I be lucky to get pregnant again, they would be able to keep an eye on my cervix.
Absolutely.
So obviously the grief and the trauma and everything else that happened after that came in very heavy. But you do, after time, you know, time can be a healer. And for me, it was, it just, you just move through it. And eventually you become, you know, a different person, but you are able to cope with what happened. But obviously, well, not obviously, but in my case, I was desperate to be pregnant again, as I am sure everybody who has a loss pretty much would feel the same, I should imagine. And so as soon as I could, I went back and did another round of IVF, which was too early, about 2 months after I'd lost my son. And I just wanted it to fix me, which is what many of us do, but it doesn't really fix what has happened, but we think it might help. Another round of IVF didn't work. So then my husband and I said, or maybe I said it, let's use more savings. Come on, let's just go back in. And off we went again. So now we're on round three total of IVF. And every time it happened, you have the 2 week wait, which is the most torturous thing I think I have ever experienced, apart from losing the baby, on, you know, that whole waiting period. How do you wake up and fill a day for 14 days? It is, you know, how do you do it? It's just
so hard,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's natural or assisted, you are waiting to know whether or not you are pregnant. So this, I mean, that was just another added layer of, I won't say trauma, but definite emotional pressure and exhaustion on a mental level.
And can I just stop you? How do you go into that? So you have lost Axel at 20 weeks and, yeah, and then you've kind of got your head together and gone into IVF again. And obviously we go into IVF in the hope that we get pregnant. Mm. But then those 2 week waits, as you say, they're fairly tortuous. But how are you feeling about being pregnant again after loss?
Just to go back and say, I hadn't got my head together.
Fair enough. Okay.
I was absolutely all over the place. There was no head together. This was pure desperation.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, definitely didn't get my head together for over 1 year, for sure. Looking back at my diary and stuff and remembering that time, I don't think I gave much consideration to how I would feel being pregnant. I just had the desperation of getting pregnant.
Fair enough.
Because at this point, I'm nearly 40, or I was 40. So there was an added, I feel, age pressure. Can I ever get pregnant again? Are my eggs going to come through for me at 40? So everyone has different levels of pressure and different types of pressure. Mine was age related, loss related, and, you know, just desperate, yeah, to get pregnant again. So I didn't give much consideration of how is it going to feel. I just needed to get there.
Sure.
So we did another two rounds of IVF after that. So now we're on round five. And, you know, husband's not a banker. I don't come from money. So we are using savings left, right, and center here for poor loft. Still hasn't been done. So, you know, at round five, I was getting a little delirious and I was doing pregnancy tests and thinking, there's a part in my book actually where I say I went around to my friend Charlotte's house with a clearly negative pregnancy test and convinced her we could see a line. It was so, you know, when you have the will to be pregnant, and I literally was in her kitchen under the skylight going, but no, Charlotte, I can see a line. And then she sort of went, I think I can too. And we're jumping around in her kitchen. And then obviously a few days later, I'm continuing to take tests and then accept the fact that it really was negative and it didn't happen again. You know, so I'd got to know the ladies at the IVF clinic, and every time I got my period, I literally just phoned them. And I found one lady there that I really liked. She was super hardcore and initially unfriendly, but I cracked her halfway through. We became really close through it, which would be another piece of my advice, actually. Find someone at the clinic, if you are doing IVF, that you connect with, and make sure, if you can, your appointments are with that nurse, you know?
Yeah.
Because that really helped me. Yeah. So, bugger me. I mean, got a period again. And I was just angry at this point, and 41 at this point. And I'm just like, I'm going again. I'm just going to go again. So I phoned up the IVF clinic and I just said, right, here we go again. And this time it felt different. And I always explain this as when I passed my driving test on my fourth go, I knew I was going to pass. It is this weird feeling I've only had a couple of times in my life. And I knew I was going to get pregnant on my sixth IVF round. I don't know how. I was like, I'm not accepting this. And I mean, that's not going to change my workings of my body. And I don't think that mental positivity helped particularly, but I was like, enough. I am going in this. I said, right, I want a different protocol. I want different drugs. We are doing something completely different this time, everyone. And I took control rather than let the doctors say to me what was happening. I said, right, I've done my research. I cannot keep doing this. We are going to get a baby. And I know how lucky I am to have become pregnant with Audrey on that sixth round, total sixth round of IVF. I know how lucky I am. And my heart just goes out to anybody who is just trying to get their first baby, their third baby, their second, fourth, whatever they want in their world. You know, it's just this, you cannot explain it unless you've been through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's the hardest thing. Oh, it really is one of the hardest things that, you know, many of us will ever go through. And there's just that longing, isn't there? And that
longing,
that kind of, you know, like you talk about it and your book, you know, is in the title, the grief of not having those memories that we create in our minds for these children that aren't even conceived necessarily.
Oh my goodness, right? Yeah.
So yeah, it's, as you say, unless you've been there, you kind of almost couldn't grasp. There are amazing empaths out there who of, you know, support us and having not been through it. But yeah, when, if you know, you know that, you know, ultimately, don't you? So
it's anything though, cancer survivors, I am never going to understand what they lived through or who currently have cancer or any other, you know, any other medical condition that affects you. It's, you're never going to understand. And that's not a negative. You're just never going to understand unless it happened to you.
Unless you've been there. You know? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So your being there is then pregnant again after putting so much into the IVF and everything, let's face it. How did it feel being pregnant? So up until that point, you were just putting everything into getting pregnant. So then you are pregnant. How did that feel? How was that pregnancy with Audrey?
To be honest, I know I blacked so much of it out that I do not remember. It's weird. I remember everything with Asti and I remember most of it with Axel, my second son, who passed. And I don't remember, I was just so, I remember panicking a lot. You know, there would be the slightest thing that would set me off and I would panic. And then I'd panic about panicking because am I affecting the baby through panicking? Is she going to come out and be the most anxious child in the world? Because I'm panicking. But I, you know, I would do as much as I could to listen to podcasts or YouTube videos or audiobooks that would either take my mind off of it by trying to distract myself, or I would just try and do anything to stop myself panicking. But the thing about being pregnant after loss is there is this huge weight on you that it could happen again. Because before I lost Axel, nobody told me this could happen. So I didn't expect it. I didn't think it was going to happen. I got pregnant on my first round of IVF. Woohoo, here we go. Aren't I lucky? Until you become unlucky, right? Which is, you know, maybe something that the hospital should prep you for. I'm not sure if that's going to cause greater panic in pregnant couples or single parents, but I just think maybe we should be given a talk at the point of pregnancy to say, these are the things that may happen to you. It probably won't. But I think you should be aware, because when it happened to me, I was totally clueless and I was in this black hole of what the hell is going on and why did this happen to me and did I kill my baby, you know? So I think maybe there should be some sort of retraining that you get the talk. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad thing. Maybe it's a good thing. But there's a great deal of panic and I kept it private from everybody. So whereas I had announced my pregnancy with Axel on Instagram, didn't have Instagram when Asti was born. So I announced my pregnancy with Axel on Instagram and then had to announce that he had passed away on Instagram. So I kept this one super quiet, didn't really go out. I did, but not to any sort of work events that I would normally do within the fashion industry. And after Audrey was born, I did put it on Instagram, but maybe 5 or 6 days after she was born. She was born by the time I'd announced I was pregnant, basically. Mm-hmm. So I put up a pregnancy post of a big belly after she'd arrived.
Right.
And just pretended that I was, hi everyone, I'm 40 weeks pregnant. Thank you all for your support. And it was lovely, but actually she was already here. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to risk it. Because you also think, well, there's the possibility that the baby may not survive after she's arrived or he's arrived. You know, all of these things come through your head. And I don't know if there's a way to ever stop somebody who has experienced loss panicking that it will happen again.
No, I think that there's milestones, aren't there? Like, you know, we want to be pregnant, but I think a lot of people need to get past the milestone of the previous loss, you know?
Right.
But even then, and it's really interesting what you say about, you know, should there be a talk that is given to pregnant women, couples and people? And it's such a fine line, isn't it? Because if you don't know, you don't know. I remember when I was told about our first miscarriage, I, you know, wasn't on Instagram, didn't know anything about this community. The fact that we were having IVF was a big deal in my family, you know, because all of everyone else, like I'm one of four, all of my sisters were knocking out babies left, right and center. And it was like, I'd heard of miscarriage. I'm sure I had, but it was like the rug had been pulled out from under me. This didn't happen to me. What was this? You know, like I was just so in so much shock about it. But then fast forward and I think, gosh, now I know so much.
Yeah.
You know, and do I know too much? Because there are things that I'm worried about that I kind of wish I didn't know about, because the chances of it happening are relatively slim. It doesn't mean it wouldn't happen to me, but I can't, you know, so I don't know that there's a right answer to do we get the warning or what's better, not knowing or knowing too much. I don't know. I think it depends on the individual, and you know, it's a really, really tough one. But what I do know is from, like, you know, the hundreds of people I've spoken to, if not thousands, that when you are pregnant after loss, it is those milestones are such a big thing. And milestones outside of the loss as well, like the 24 weeks viability, you know, getting to that stage and, you know, like knowing that hopefully if your baby makes it to there, God forbid, but, you know, NICU and they would receive the support, hopefully, you know, and so it's, like you say, that panic. And I've totally recognized that anxiety. Am I going to pass this anxiety down to my baby?
Oh my goodness. Like, you're already worrying and then you're worrying about worrying. And it's just, oh my God.
Did you receive any support, like any counseling or anything through that pregnancy to try and manage that?
So I was quite sort of naive about needing support. So when I lost my son at 5 months into my pregnancy, there was no way I was going to research or ask friends to research bereavement counselors in my area, which I wish I had done because I feel it would have made a huge difference. But I went through the NHS system and I was registered with a doctor in Notting Hill, even though I'd moved out of the area some time ago because I love my doctor. So I asked for NHS counseling service, but tragically, 6 or 7 days after Axel passed, Grenfell Tower happened in the Notting Hill area. So absolutely understandably, the victims and their families took priority for counselling over me. And then when I did get counselling, it was 5 or 6 weeks after I'd experienced the loss. And they had read my notes wrong. And so for 2 weeks, I was having phone counselling, but they thought I was a Grenfell victim.
Oh, God.
So I think it's just one of those very intense times for the NHS, and it just happened this way. It wasn't great, but it, you know, you understand why. And so that, I lost my faith in them. Then I had a really young counselor who was in her late 20s, I guess a trainee, and didn't understand loss, which is a problem in itself because you can't connect with someone. So I think going through the motions with her was a waste of my time. And had I have had the resources or emotional energy to research a bereavement counselor, I would strongly advise that. And in turn, when I got pregnant with Audrey, I think I was so disillusioned with any counseling at that point, I didn't think to then go forward with a counselor who could have actually helped a lot, I would imagine, through the anxiety of the pregnancy with Audrey. And I think I speak for most people when we say, oh, I'm just being silly. Oh, I'm just being neurotic, or, oh, I don't want to bother anyone. Oh, I don't need counseling, because I'm just being overdramatic. You know, I think we all need to give ourselves a break and say, no, I'm not being dramatic. This was a big thing and I need help.
Honestly, like, you're so right. And I'm sorry that you had that experience. I'm just grabbing from my phone because I don't know if you know Clementine app, but they give you a daily mantra. And the one yesterday, ooh, I actually I screenshotted, and you talking there, I just wanted to pull it up. And it says, all of my emotions are acceptable and important.
Oh my goodness.
Because that's the case, isn't it? You know? Like, they really, really are. Whatever you're going through, or just on a, you know, quote unquote normal day, like, all of our emotions are valid, you know, and important.
So many of us, I'm sure you're included in this, and many of your listeners, we think, oh, we're just being silly. Oh, I don't want to cause a fuss. Oh, they're going to think I'm really silly to just to bring up this minor issue. But we need to.
Yeah.
You know?
We do. Mm. Would you mind if I ask you, Pippa, about the conversations that you have had, are having with your children, with Asti and Audrey, about Axel? I know that's something that people drop into my DMs sometimes and ask, like, how do I talk about my baby that died my children who are alive? Is that something you're comfortable sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the night, so I went into premature labor when my cervix had opened at 3 a.m. We don't have any family in the neighborhood, and it was 3 a.m. So I'm like, oh God, we cannot knock on a neighbor's door and say, can you look after our almost 6-year-old at this point? With, not to be too graphic, I gave birth in the house on towels, lovely 999 lady. Thank goodness we got her. She was awesome. Then the paramedics arrived and helped us. But Asti was there. So for a long time, years later, whenever we would say, oh, we'd book a table for 3 people, he would always say 4 people at a restaurant, or we'd be going out for the day and he'd always include Axel in that. And it's very sweet. And at one point he was telling us off for not including him. And we were thinking, oh, is this getting now to tricky territory, you know? But it eased off. And I remember Asti coming into the A&E cubicle where I was lying after I'd gone in the ambulance. My husband and my son traveled in the car behind. And I just said, your baby brother has died. You know, I remember the nurse saying to me, I don't remember much of that morning, but I remember her saying to me, that was probably the best thing you could have done, is just to say what's happened. And then we work around how we're going to manage it later, rather than I'm ill, the baby's ill, the baby's gone somewhere. You know, I just literally said, your brother has died, but we are going to be okay, even though definitely wasn't. But I think at the time I was in a very sort of just very being very pragmatic at that point before it really hit me about 2 hours later. Holy cow, what the hell just happened, you know? And then with Audrey now, she's very aware. She brings up Axel a lot, but I don't think she understands who he is yet. She's 3. But she knows he's part of our family. And then when she's older, I will show her the photos that I have of Axel. I wish they'd thought to dress him in little clothes, because I've seen lots of lovely babies who passed away at lots of different stages of pregnancy, and they are in little clothes. And the family photos are gorgeous. And we don't have that, which is a bit of a sore point for me, because I would love to have one of those family photos, you know, where you're holding the baby. But you know, we don't, and we have photos of him, but they're very stark, and he is on sheets and he's naked, but they're lovely for me and my family. But I think I'll show Audrey when she's older. I just think, to be honest, and just keep the memory of Axel there, without, like my son did at the beginning, not being told off by the children for not including the sibling who's not around any longer, or siblings. But yeah, honesty is the best policy in all of this, I think. I just tell him everything. We still speak about him. We go to, his birthday was last week, so we went to the cemetery and, you know, took flowers and sat and had a cupcake. And, you know, so we go there, and I just being completely honest with both of them.
Yeah. And that, like, that's amazing. And that's your path, and other people, you know, kind of deal with things in their own way. But I just, hearing you say that, what I also hear is, like, you being a mother to them, but then that must, and I do hate the word trigger, but it is the right word, you know, but then, you know, that still kind of triggers your grief and dealing with all of that. It's just so, you know, you say kind of, yep, straightforwardly, just being honest with them, like, that must take a lot. So that's a big thing, you know, and amazing.
Gosh, I think after the first year, I was definitely in full grief and traumatized. And then as you come through it, I just think you're just emotionally, mentally able to be a bit more sort of not matter of fact about it at all, but you're able to talk more openly about what happened because that level of extreme trauma and emotion has subsided a little, hopefully. I mean, not in everybody. Some people, you know, the grief will consume them for maybe forever, maybe for many, many, many years, depending on their circumstances. But yeah, I just think I'm able to talk about it now without crying every time.
yes, absolutely. And we all have our moments, don't we? And you've put that to kind of good use, you know, like as in your experience of dealing with grief and processing grief, and to good use. That just doesn't feel like the right way to say that.
I know.
But you are gifted everything you've learned, I suppose, by writing it down, haven't you? And your book is coming out, Beyond Grief, is coming out later this year, isn't it?
Yeah, on the 25th of August, which was chosen by the publisher, and it's actually my first son's birthday.
Oh, there you go.
Cute. I wrote this piece for British Vogue because my mate had just been made the editor, and he just said, would you write about your experience? It was about 6 months after Axel died, I think. And I just said, well, with full copy control, yes. And he said, of course, which is unusual, but in the circumstances, I was given that approval, which is really kind of them. And the article was one of the most shared in their history because it never really, especially in a mainstream magazine of its type, it had never really been spoken about so openly and with such raw detail. And so it had a real flying time, that article, and I'm so glad it reached so many people. But so publishers came at me immediately. I said, would you write the book? And I said, no, I can't do it properly because I would be just too emotional. I'm not going to help anyone. A year later, they came back. I'd written another piece for British Vogue about the year of grief. And they came back again, a couple of them, and well, a couple of different ones. And I just said, I'm not ready. And then it happened a year later. It's so nice, but it's so funny. And I wrote another article a year after that for British Vogue. So one a year at the same point for 3 years. And they came back again. And I said, you know what? I'm almost there, but I can't do it yet because I'm not going to help. I'm just going to be too emotional. Anyway, in lockdown, I thought, oh my goodness, I think I'm ready. So I have 24 contributors in my book, Jules Oliver, Elizabeth Day. I mean, you know, really kind, lovely women have spoken to me about their own losses. I've got medical professionals, I've got spiritualists, I've got therapists, and lots of my own experience on the pages, in that it's not a memoir. It is every question I wish I had known when it happened to me. I mean, it has everything in there, every question about why it happens, how it could happen, how people can support those who've experienced loss. Spiritual information, lots of medical stuff from this incredible woman called Gubi Aida, who is a leading obstetrician gynecologist over at Charles Westminster. So I feel like if it happened to me again, this is the book, and I'm not just saying it because it's my book, maybe a bit, but this is the book I pick up because it has the stories and the medical side and the spiritual and therapy side. It's just sort of like, good God, if it ever happened to me, 1 week, 3 months, full term, there's everything on the pages that will just hopefully answer those questions and give some, you know, a lot of clarity and assistance to someone who is on, you know, has been through that experience of loss at any stage.
Wow. It sounds amazing and incredibly powerful. You know, like I am, like every story matters. Like I love bringing different stories, you know, kind of to other people. So the fact that you've got all of those contributors across all different kind of like experiences and specialisms just sounds incredible. And it sounds like something that one might read perhaps when you're trying to conceive to prepare you.
There's one beautiful contributor, Kate, who tried for 10 years and experienced many miscarriages. And in the end, she had an egg donor baby who she speaks about and said, this was always my baby. And it makes me cry every time I read her interview in there, because she just said she was always supposed to be my baby. And if I could meet the egg donor when my daughter's 16 or 18, I would just say thank you. You know, and there's surrogacy journeys and goodness me. I mean, I think pretty much everything, and, you know, ending pregnancies for medical reasons, and oh, goodness me, there's, I've learned so much as well about what does and can happen in pregnancy and loss, you know?
That's it. That's it. And for those who have been through that experience, whether it be days, weeks, months, years before, sometimes reading other people's, you know, kind of versions of, and I have no doubt the advice, and as you say, kind of practical medical information in there as well can be so validating, and perhaps answer some questions, or just kind of, yeah, just help people feel heard and seen and supported, which is what we need, isn't it, in this community. Yeah. If we can't fix things, we need to be held going through. So thank you so much, Pippa. I truly appreciate you joining me and sharing your story with us. And I look forward to your book coming out. There will obviously be a link in the show notes so people can pre-order it already, can't they?
Yeah.
Yep. And then when it comes out on Asti's birthday. So yes, that will be a double celebration that day for sure.
Oh, thanks, Kat.
Wonderful. All right then, Pippa. Will you take care now? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I've loved it.
Bye-bye. Bye.